I have a request from Mari. One of my Asian American sisters out there, to read a Chinese American revenge tale. And this one's collected in an anthology called Charlie Chan is Dead. It's a wild anthology. Pick it up if you can. one of my friends she said about this form is this. It's a cross between a traditional classical Chinese ghost story, revenge story, and a fractured fairy tale from Rocky and Bullwinkle. If you can imagine that, that hybrid, it's called Moon. Moon was a little fat Chinese girl. She had a big yellow face befitting her name. She was sad and lonely, as were all little fat Chinese girls in 1991. And she had a strange, insatiable desire for a pair of trashy blonde twins named Smith. No accounting for taste, of course. Every night she would wander on the beach in search of them, hoping to espy them taking a joyride around Pacific Beach in their rebuilt sky blue convertible Impala, their long blonde hair swept backward like horses' manes, their faces obscenely sunburnt, resembling ripe halves of peaches. One chilly September evening, the boys stopped to make a campfire on the beach, and Moon, feeling quite full and confident that day, descended upon them, waddling so fat, so round and shiny with sea spray. She offered them chocolate macadamia nut clusters and began to sing, strumming a tiny lute-like instrument her grandmother sent her from China. She began singing in an ancient falsetto, a baleful song about exiled geese winging across the horizon, about the waxing and waning of stormy seas, about children lost to the unknown depths of the new kingdom. The boys were born and raised in the valley and were very unsophisticated. They were also functional illiterates and were held back twice in the fifth grade. And there was no way that they could have understood the complexities of her song. They huddled in that sporting male way and whispered surreptitiously, speaking in very short sentences between grunts or long run-on sentences with ambiguous antecedents. So that Moon was not quite sure whether she was the subject of their discussion. Finally, the boys offered to give Fat Moon a ride in their stainless steel canoe they got for Christmas. We know, of course, that they were up to trouble. You don't think that their hospitality was sincere, do you? Moon graciously accepted their invitation. Actually, she was elated given the bad state of her social life. She hadn't had a date for centuries. So the two boys paddled, one fore, one aft, with Fat Moon in the middle. Moon was so happy that she started strumming her lute and singing the song of Hiawatha. Don't ask me why. This was what she felt like singing. Suddenly, the boys started rocking the boat forcefully, forward and backward, making wild horsey sounds until the boat flipped over. Fat Moon, lute and all. The boys laughed and taunted Moon to reappear from the rough water. When she didn't surface after a few minutes, it suddenly occurred to them that she was drowning. They watched in bemusement while the last of her yellow forehead bled into the waves. Finally, they dove in and dragged her heavy body back into the boat, which was quite a feat, for she was twice as heavy wet than dry, and she was now tangled in sea flora. When they finally docked, Moon discovered the boys saved her only to humiliate her. It appeared that they wanted a reward for saving her life, a blood debt, if you will. In this material world, goods are bartered for goods, and actions, however heroic or well-intentioned in appearances, are never clearly separated from services rendered. And in the American ledger, all services must be paid for in the end, and all contracts must be signed at closing, bearing each participant's legal signature. Thus, the boys ripped off Moon's dress and took turns pissing all over her round face and belly, saying, "So it's true that your cunts are really slanted, slant-eyed cunt. Did you really think that we had any interest in you?" After the boys finished their vile act, they left Moon on the wharf without a stitch on, glowing with yellow piss, and she cried, wailed all the way home on her bicycle. Imagine a little fat Chinese girl, naked, peddling, wailing. When Moon got home, her mother called her a slut. Her father went on and on about the Sino-Japanese War and about the starving girl children in Guangdong. "And look, what are you doing with your youth and new prosperity? Wailing, carrying on, just because some trashy white boys rejected you. Have you no shame? Your cousin, the son, matriculated Harvard. Your brothers, the stars, all became engineers. Where are the I.M. Pace and Yo-Yo Ma's of your generation?" They sent her to bed without supper that night as a reminder that self-sacrifice is the most profound virtue of the Chinese people. Up in her room, Moon brooded and swore on a stack of Bibles that she would seek revenge for this terrible incident, and that if she were to die today, she would come back to Earth as an angry ghost to haunt those motherfuckers. With this in mind, Moon swallowed a whole bottle of sleeping pills, only to cough them up 10 minutes later. Obviously, they didn't kill her. However, those 10 minutes of retching must have prevented oxygen from entering her brain and left her deranged for at least a month after this episode. "Hey, I'm no doctor, just a storyteller. Take my diagnosis with caution, please." Overnight, she became a homicidomaniac. A foul plague would shroud all of Southern California, which, curiously, infected only blonde men. Both natural and peroxided types. Those slightly hennaed would be spared. For 30 days and 30 nights, Moon scoured the seaside, howling, windswept, in search of blonde victims. They would drown on their surfboards or collapse while polishing their cars. They would suffocate in their sleep next to their wives and lovers. Some died, leaving a long trail of excrement, because whatever pursued them was so terrible, they literally scared the shit out of them. And not since Herod had we seen such a devastating assault on male children. On the 31st night, the horror subsided. Moon finally found the Smith boys cruising in their sky blue convertible Impala. They were driving south on the scenic route between San Clemente and Del Mar when she plunged down on them. Her light was so powerful and bright that the boys were momentarily blinded and swerved into a canyon. Their car turned over 12 times. They were decapitated, the coroner said, so cleanly as if a surgeon had done the job with a laser. Moon grew up, lost weight, and became a famous singer, which proves that there is no justice in the universe, or that indeed there is justice. Your interpretation of this denouement mostly depends on your race, creed, hair color, social and economic class, and political proclivities, and whether or not you are a feminist revisionist and have a habit of cheering for the underdog. What is the moral of the story? Well, it's a tale of revenge, obviously, written from a Chinese-American girl's perspective. My intentions are to veer you away from teasing and humiliating little chubby Chinese girls like myself. And that one wanton act of humiliation you perapetrated on the fore or aft of that boat of my arrival may be one humiliating act too many. For although we are friendly neighbors, you don't really know me. You don't know the depth of my humiliation. And you don't know where, you don't know what I can do. You don't know what is beneath my doing.